Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
American fiction is over, but wait, that's right. We got y'all here on the Connect podcast. We back again, like it's crack. Man, I really hate that we have to steal that because it's so good. But we back like it's crack again to talk about another black movie here on the Connect on Post Show Recaps. It's me, Chappelle. And once again, I am joined with my co-host, Mark. Girl, you bees pregnant again? Is that you?
I bees pregnant because we live in the ghetto.
Yeah, we so lived in the ghetto.
So, I'm back to talk about this amazing film, like very layered and nuanced movie here. So, so glad to break it down with the both of you today.
Yeah. And of course, yo, LaTanya, where you be going in a hurry like that? Welcome back.
I heard some police sirens, so I had to get away because I'm on the run. You know that.
You know that.
They'll be blowing up my spot.
like the convict felon you are, you know,
obvious convict.
Listen, if you haven't caught on by now, we are talking about some of the lines from the new movie from Cord Jefferson called American Fiction. This is a satire about an African-American novelist who is pushing back against some of the industry expectations for Black authors and Black stories. There was a lot of buzz about the movie, but like a lot of Black things, it was like buzz for us, and then nobody else was really talking about it. And then now that I've gone to watch the movie, I found out that there's even areas that aren't playing the movie. So we thought it'd be great to give you our review of the movie in a broad sense and to tell y'all what we thought about it and to, you know, give you the opportunity to go see it. Now, if you have already seen it or you don't care about being spoiled, we'll take a break in the middle and then we'll talk about the movie at length and the spoilers that have to go with it and kind of get into the plot and talk about why we like the movie so much. But first and foremost, we just wanted to kind of let you all know why you should or should not go watch American Fiction. Before we get started into all of that, we of course want to thank you all for being here with The Connect again. We enjoy having our listeners. We enjoy the comments, the reviews. We did get a Spotify review that we cannot read because, you know, we don't really talk about that. But again, keep them coming because we're going to cover that one day. Also, we got some YouTube comments on our last video for The Color Purple. It says, let's cover school days. I'm thinking, yeah, I like school days. I'm sure Mari has seen School Days.
I have seen School Days. It's kind of funny. Like at Howard freshman week, they literally make all of the freshmen.
Oh, wow.
I love like, an HBCU. Yeah. Yeah, definitely seen School Days as well. I don't think it was required reading at Prairie View, but I think that it was kind of like, have you seen School Days? Okay, well, cool. If you have or if you haven't, someone is watching it in a dorm right now because they need you to understand what you're about to get yourself into. And Mari, I don't know, in my experience, School Days wasn't that far off. It was kind of pretty close, even when we went to school, you know?
Good preparation. And I think they still do that to this day. They're like, hey, it's always a free movie night during freshman week. They're like, hey, everybody, we're watching School Days in the auditorium if you want to come and check it out. And everybody does because you're a freshman. You don't know what you're doing. You want to be with your people. So you all go and watch School Days. And it's amazing.
It's amazing. Latanya, you a School Days girl?
I am a School Days fan. Yeah.
There you go.
It was not required viewing at my college, oddly. But I had seen it before I went there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Really like that movie.
Well, apparently it's being asked for us to talk about it on The Connect. And so we'll have to see if we can bring that to people. Again, thank you all for listening. We love the reviews. We love the feedback. But now we're going to give a review of our own when talking about American Fiction. Latanya, how do you feel about American Fiction? Like, you know, like I guess for the listeners, why don't you give them your like brief synopsis of what exactly is going on in this film?
Okay, so American Fiction is the directorial debut of Cord Jefferson. Cord Jefferson, for those of you all who don't know, is a prolific writer who started off with places like The Larry Wilmore Show, The Good Place. He won an Emmy for Watchmen. He was on Station 11. He consulted for Succession. And this is his directorial debut. He wrote and directed this movie. He is a genius. This movie stars Jeffrey Wright as Thelonious Monk, aka Monk Ellison. And he is kind of like a down on his luck author and professor who is just kind of fed up with the way like Black people are represented in literature. He writes very like classical books, it seems, and he's not getting a lot of like eyes in terms of reception. But then he goes and he sees Issa Rae's character, Centara, and her book, Weeze Lives in the Ghetto, and sees how the audience is raving about it. And he gets, he goes through a lot of hardships in his life that, you know, require him to have more money than he has. And he thinks to himself, maybe I'll write my own version of Weeze Lives in the Ghetto. And he does under an assumed name, gives it to his publisher, and lo and behold, the literary world loves it. It takes the literary world by storm, and he kind of has to live this double life throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, Mari, the double life part of the movie is very interesting to me because did he have to live a double life or was he just in too deep?
Exactly. It was just kind of like... I think this movie is very interesting in that sense that he's like... It's not really a battle within himself. He did something compulsive where he wrote a book and he didn't think anything about it. And then it comes back that, oh, it's profitable. It can make money. And then at the same time, all of these things are coming at him at once where he's like, oh, I need money. And he's like forced to do this double life sort of thing. But no, he does not need to live this double life. He's, you know, he slowly starts to realize like that's something within him that he needs to like not do because he's pushing people away. It's like he treats it as a badge of honor to be above people.
Yeah. This is
spoiler free.
Spoiler free for now.
Spoiler free. Yeah.
Yeah, this movie is adapted from Percival Everett's 2001 novel, Erasure, which, if I understand correctly, it's supposed to be a parody on, like, Push by Sapphire, because it's like that story is written in a very, like, you know, I guess you would say lowbrow, with quotation marks, way that is supposed to be palatable and understanding. And we know Push by Sapphire becomes Precious, this great Oscar-nominated movie. And so this novel is supposed to be like a play on that. And then they took the novel and flipped it into this movie. Watching this movie, LaTanya, I will say it did make me want to go read Erasure, because I felt like if this movie was good, I definitely want to see how good the book is, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It made me want to read Erasure, definitely. And there were, like, other books that made appearances in this movie, too, that I also want to read. Like, it just really made, like, me have a literary thirst. It made me want to immerse myself more in the world of books in general. But I definitely want to read Erasure now, given that this is what came from it. We'll get into it, but there's kind of like a play within a play element that works in this movie really, really well. So I want to see like what the book does with that as well.
Yeah. Mari, you are a big reader. I know this. Have you read the books that are mentioned in this film, or even Erasure, or like, what did this book, I mean, this movie do for your thirst for, you know, novels and books, as somebody who is somebody like, you know, likes to read a lot?
It really made me think of like the literary world. Like, first, I do want to read Erasure, because Erasure actually does have a full book within a book. Like, I read the synopsis of it, and Erasure, like, basically what the movie gives us is Thelonious Monk's perspective. But in the book, we get that perspective, like bookend in the actual story. But in the middle, he actually writes the whole book of My Pathology or slash fuck. The author actually wrote a whole book within the book. And I was like, dang, I really want to read that book now, because the translation to the movie version, we don't really get the gist of what he actually writes, you know. And again, maybe we can save that for the spoiler section, but I definitely want to read Erasure. Now it made me think of my own reading habits, because I'm a huge reader, and I actually read a lot of stuff. And I'm the type of person who goes on like binges of genres. So I'm a good mystery girl. I love mysteries, thrillers, crime thrillers, and stuff like that. Your James Pattersons, you know. And then I also like science fiction, ranging from like your Dean Koontz, Thomas science fiction, to your Game of Thrones, fantasy science fiction. And I do urban fiction, but so often. And, you know, it reminds me of like your Zane novels, your Jerome Dickies and stuff like that. And it really, I like how they highlight is like, African American fiction is always its own section. It's always I hate when they call it urban fiction. I truly do, but you know, it's its own section. And it reminded me of some of the like urban fiction books that I've read, and I'm like, oh my god, I've read books exactly like this. One of my kind of favorite memoirs is about a woman who was like, her life was horrendous, like just from the second she came out, horrendous, but she ended up being a lawyer, so it was okay type thing, you know? And so you see that genre, and you see that genre pop up, and you see that it is like pushed for our books. So as a reader, I'm like, yeah, I'm grounded in the story, because I do understand what Thelonious Monk is saying, you know, but you know, it's open to like nuance and stuff like that. So I really liked this movie for a number of different reasons. I think it was very, very layered, and I think it gets satire. It does satire perfectly. I think it gets across the narrative of like race and race relations in America too, like to a T. So I'm like, I love this movie a lot.
Yeah. And this movie has a what I would consider a very star-studded cast.
Yeah.
I actually had not been aware of who all was in this movie. I really should start looking at that stuff before I go watch the movie. I mean, we said the same thing for The Color Purple. I was like, her is here? But in this movie, we see that it is starring Jeffrey Wright. And I was like, oh, I know him. He's from everything that I saw when I was a child, you know? And so Jeffrey Wright, I knew, was the star of this. And I was very excited to see him in this role. LaTanya, for the people who are unfamiliar, what do you think about Jeffrey Wright?
Oh my God. I love Jeffrey Wright. Like, just the decades of work that he has put in, and like, his voice is so distinctive. Like, you know him from so many things. You know him from Westworld. You know him from playing Basquiat. You know him from being the Watcher in the Marvel series that I can't remember the name of right now. The
Loki?
No, it's the animated one. What If?
Oh, What If?
What If? Yeah.
What If? He's just like one of those actors who, you know that quality is coming when he's cast in a role. It's just like guaranteed. I love him so much. I love that he has such tremendous range. But his voice is what really like stands out for me. Like, you can hear that voice anywhere and know that that's Jeffrey Wright. And there's just something about the world weariness that he plays in this role that is like really poignant to me. And he's dealing with a lot of family issues that I am incredibly familiar with. So it's just interesting to see at this point in his career that he could still pull out performances like this.
Yeah, I loved it. I love Jeffrey Wright in this role. And then I loved, of course, these, I guess I would call them the supporting cast, but I mean, they're just, that's a great cast. Mari's already mentioned Issa Rae. I'm sorry, LaTanya, you mentioned Issa Rae earlier as Centaurra Golden, as one of his almost like rival authors in this movie. And I think Issa Rae as Centaurra Golden is a very interesting character to talk about, because Issa Rae has probably been faced with a lot of these same dilemmas as well. And even these criticisms and these critiques, you know, like Issa Rae is making and telling Black stories, but Issa Rae is very much telling Black stories from Issa Rae's perspective. And so a lot of these will not, like, it won't ring true for everybody, but it will ring true for the people that it rings true to. And it matters a lot to them. We here, I'm looking at, we've been very clear where we stand on Issa Rae. She's amazing. She can do no wrong. And so, and she can do no wrong. And I wish everybody knew that she could do no wrong and they wouldn't cancel rap shit. Anyway, so we'll get to that later on. But so Issa Rae is an author who has leaned into the idea that, hey, we're doing this for consumers, right? And so I'm making books that are true to people's stories, but also for people to go on and use and make them marketable and make money off of them. And that is obviously something that is going to be in contrast to what Jeffrey Wright is standing for in this movie. Mari, another person who was in this movie, obviously Tracee Ellis Ross, who, that was a surprise for me. I don't think I remembered her in the trailer, but I love Joan, you know?
Were you happy to see her? Tracee Ellis Ross basically playing a Joan character, but spitting like so many truths and like just rapid fire at this man. It was so good. Like, Tracy, you're right. It was like, I really sat there and I was like, man, when was the last time Tracee Ellis Ross was in a movie? You know what I'm saying? Like, not a quality TV show, but in a movie. And she really just sold it. This cast was amazing. And Tracee Ellis Ross was a highlight for me.
Yeah. We still have other people as well. I mean, this cast, I'm telling you, I'm like, let's leave it right there. Y'all, we can't talk about this without talking about Sterling K. Brown. LaTanya. Oh
my God.
What's up? Sterling K. Brown is here.
Sterling K. Brown is in the building and he is playing a manic, coked up F-boy. I have never seen...
Gay F-boy.
I have never seen Sterling K. Brown play a role like this. But there's like so much heart and vulnerability behind it as well that it's just like a marvel to behold. Like, he is as prickly at times as he is endearing. Just endearing. Yeah, it's just, it's so great. Like, everybody is pitch perfect in this cast. And he is no exception.
Yes. Sterling K. Brown's always fun to watch in every role that he's ever been in. He's so fascinating to me. And I just love, like you said, the range of some of these characters and some of these actors. These are like the pinnacle of actors. And it's really sad to me that a lot of people won't see this film just due to the fact that it's not being played everywhere. And because of the war on DEI and CRT, a lot of people aren't wanting to go watch and talk about truths like this. But I think this watching Sterling K. Brown's character here, and it's just so nuanced of a character, so different than anything we've seen from him. It was fun to watch. Mari, Erica Alexander is here, and I screamed.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I've known her my whole life.
Attorney-in-law.
Yes.
The Maverick is in the building. Whole
life, you know, and it was so fun seeing her.
Yeah, it is great to see her in like a softer role, softer character here, and not feeling like just the romantic interest. She feels like she's like contributing to the story. Just beautiful. Like every time she's on the screen, I'm like, damn, she's so beautiful. Forgetting what we're like watching and shit. Like, good for her, and I'm glad she's getting some more recognition. I remember she was just talking about it at like the award season this year, how like she was on the set for some movie. I don't know what it was, but it was a predominantly white movie, and the white cast and crew didn't know who she was, so they were just treating her like any old actress. And then meanwhile, like anytime one of the black crews or actors or extras came up, they're like, oh my God, they're like, you know, they're like us, what we would be doing if we saw Erica Alexander in person. And it like, they took the white crew, were like, what? Like, I don't understand. And it just shows you like there's two Americas. And unfortunately, Erica Alexander has like slipped through the cracks when she is like one of the greatest actresses of like our like time and stuff like that, and she just doesn't get the recognition she deserves.
Truly,
yeah.
She does from us, but not
she gets from us. Latanya, I cannot stop talking about the cast without mentioning Leslie Uggams.
Oh my god.
They just slipped like Leslie Uggams in this movie like it was nothing. I was like, y'all, Leslie Uggams is still doing it. It's so incredible every time I see her on TV.
The great Leslie Uggam, she plays Monk's mother. A mainstream, I'll call it, audience will know her as Blind Al from Deadpool. But she was Kizzy in Roots. She was Leah Walker in Empire. She has a Tony. She has a Daytime Emmy. She is a legend. She is fantastic in this role. And she really is just embodying this role. Like, As playing someone who has Alzheimer's is incredibly demanding, because it's such a multifaceted illness. You go from being catatonic to being completely up and like dancing in one scene, to being completely with your faculties and knowing who everybody is, to not remembering that your daughter got a divorce. You know, like there's just so many levels to it. And you know, with my own grandmother suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia, I can really identify so much with this. And it was really a really hard watch, honestly, because of that for me. But the care that Leslie Uggams took in playing this character just really meant so much in having that type of representation on the screen.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that at first glance, this movie does not feel like it's going to hit those notes. You know, it doesn't feel like it's going to be a tale about, you know, loss and about, you know, the struggle of a dying loved one or someone who has a deteriorating disease or anything like that. And I mean, like, if you've dealt with that kind of thing, this is such a heavy film at moments. You know, it's a comedy, but also it's so heartfelt and it's so true and it's so realistic to like anybody's experience. And so although the film is exploring how my experience might be different than the next person's experience, some of these things are universal, you know, and dealing with somebody who has Alzheimer's or dementia or, you know, any other terminal illness, once you've done it, once you've dealt with that, you've seen it. You've seen these awful things that are happening in these people's bodies and the way it's affecting them. And you don't forget the way that feels. You don't forget watching it, and you don't forget how real that feels. And so in this movie, yeah, you get confronted with that while telling a story about a man who is basically adding S's to words that don't require S's, you know, and that is the comedy of the movie. So I loved it. I loved the cast. I loved watching it. I would definitely recommend it for whoever is on the fence about it. Or if you cannot find it, I would say go find it online somewhere in my neighborhood in the middle of Texas. They're not showing this movie. I wonder why. But when I, thanks to, you know, thanks to some things, we managed to find it and I got to watch it. And I really hope to be able to watch it in theaters one day to support the film. That's my takeaway. It's great. I suggest everybody watches it. You might not like it, but I do think that white audiences and black audiences can enjoy this film for many different reasons. I think the comedy is to the point where anybody can laugh at it. And I think that if you're black, there might be other layers to why you're laughing at these same exact jokes. So that's how I feel. Mari, what about you? What's your review of American Fiction overall?
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is a strong recommend. Like we said, it's almost ironic that this particular movie is limited release and not available everywhere. It's like commenting on its own. Like, it's so annoying. But yeah, the fact that we can't, it's not a wide release is so stunning to me when the source material itself talks about how limited a reach that African-American based media can go and how it's dependent on how far white distributors will basically carry it, you know. It also received a few award nominations from the TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival, and it did get nominated for Academy Award, I believe, but it was for like Best Original Score, something like that. So it's one of those movies where I think if you can, by any means, go and watch it, go and support it if you can, because it is so good. If you are looking for like an intellectual movie that also is very funny and very layered but nuanced enough that all sides of a conversation are presented and analyzed, I think if that's something that you're into, this is something you'd want to see for sure. And again, it's also entertaining as well. It's very entertaining.
Very entertaining, very funny. LaTanya, what do you say about this movie?
See this movie any way that you can. Like, support this movie. Cord Jefferson is one of the greatest voices that we have right now in our generation. If you enjoyed, you know, the humor of The Good Place, if you enjoyed anything about Watchmen, because there was so much to love about that show. If you like Station 11, if you like the humor of Succession, then you will enjoy this movie. And the cast is first rate. The performances are fantastic. And it really does touch on an era of America, like a part of America that doesn't get talked about very much in movies and TV. And what it means when Black people tell their stories and how those stories kind of get co-opted, or how they have to be put in a particular box in order to be successful. I mean, you all said it already. The fact that this doesn't have a wide release is an example of putting a Black story in a box. So try to get it out of the box. Go and see this movie. I'm blessed that I live in Chicago, and so this movie is available to be seen. I can buy a ticket. But if you do not live in an area like that and you need to go search it out, you should go search it out, because I guarantee you will find something to love here.
Yeah, we're looking at you, flyover states. Okay, and with that, we're going to take a brief ad break, and then we'll be right back to talk about some spoilers and to, you know, really get into the nitty-gritty of this film right after this.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy.
Chumba. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, y'all, let's talk about it. I enjoyed the film. We've talked about that, but like, let's really get into the plot here. We have this literature teacher, at least in the very beginning. This is Monk. He's teaching, and very quickly, he is let go or put on leave because he writes the N-word. He writes nigger on the whiteboard, and it's making the white people uncomfortable, Mari.
Yeah, and not for nothing, it's the name of a book that he the module was on Southern literature, like American Southern literature, and I forget the full name that it was, but nigger is in the title, and he wrote it on the thing. And yeah, a white girl raised her hands like, I am very uncomfortable with this. And he's like, are you now? Interesting. Yeah. And it's also kind of over the top as well, a little bit. I'm not going to lie, in a sense she walks out. And then when he's in his meeting getting like reprimanded, he's like, why is everybody so sensitive? I was like, oh, no. Mr. I don't see race. So it's very interesting how they set him up here as a character. Yeah.
He's very much he's so highbrow that he thinks that like, you know, everybody who is not him is almost beneath him, but he doesn't say it. He more like hints at it by talking around it and asking questions that are very obvious to him that, you know, so he can insert his opinion into other people's minds without, you know, actually saying, I think I'm better than you. I think I'm smarter than you. I think you're dumb for feeling this way. And so he's writing a book called Echo. He hasn't written a book in a while. And they can very much tell that he is unhappy. They saw him crying in the car. Later on, we see him talking to his agent. And the people, LaTanya, are saying that they would like a book about African-American experience. And he's like, I'm African-American. These are my experiences. Why aren't these books selling? LaTanya, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because the book that he's trying to write is like the reworking of like Persepolis or something from like a Black perspective, which sounds interesting, but is definitely not what the mainstream audience, like the people who are buying books at the airport along with their neck pillows, wants to see from Black authors. And I mean, that's very telling in and of itself. Like, what is it that society wants to see from Black people and wants to hear from Black voices? We hear all the time, now more than ever, it's important to listen to Black voices. But what is it that you want to hear us say, right? If you don't agree with what it is that we say, then we don't get support and, you know, we don't get published.
Yeah. And so there's something to be said about writing stuff that for art, and, you know, writing it because you believe in it. And then there's something to be said about writing something because you want to make money. And, you know, you having to find the balance in what that is. You know, I can write this and maybe nobody ever reads it, but it's the best work of art. It's the best literature, you know, that I can write. But if no one reads it, who cares, right? If the tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, did it make a sound? And here he's being combated with, okay, well, if you want to make a sound, here's what you need to do. And he's broke. He hasn't sold a book in a while. He hasn't published anything in a while, I should say. It doesn't sound like his sales are that great either. And so now he has the dilemma. Does he give the people what they want by blackening it up? Or does he just kind of continue to stay true to himself and write something that he feels like is black, but black for him and that other black people should strive to be, it seems. And so that's when we're confronted with Issa Rae's character, Zantara Golden, who she has a lot of attention on her right now because she has her book. Latanya, what was the book called again? It's Wheeze Be in the Ghetto?
Wheeze Lives in the Ghetto.
See, I prefer Wheeze Be in the Ghetto.
I think there's a B in there. Wheeze Be Living in the Ghetto.
Really? Wheeze Be Living in the Ghetto? See, that's too much. It's too wordy.
Let me see. It's, I think I wrote it down here.
Wheeze Lives in the Ghetto. See, I think the B would have taken it to the next point. Listen, Issa Rae's character here is Zantara Golden, and she is reading an excerpt of this book, and it's basically what I opened the podcast with, which is, girl, you be pregnant again? You be pregnant again? Where you be going in a hurry? Where you be going in a hurry like that? You know, very much a very specific type of dialect that could be, you know, equated to some African-American vernacular English or, you know, at least at the very least Ebonics, you know, slang, if you will. And Jeffrey Wright's character, Monk, is not feeling it at all. He thinks this is pandering. He thinks this is lowbrow. And he's not a fan. But, Mara, you read books like this, and you seem to enjoy them, right?
Well, so I'm not going to lie. Forced dialect in urban fiction annoys me if it's done in a certain way, if it's not done in a certain way. So I don't mind. I don't mind, like, linguistic dialogue, like phonetic dialogue. For especially for accents in books when people are talking, yes, but narratively, like if it's an omnipresent narrative and you're still talking in that you know accent or I can't, it gives me a really big headache. So like, you know what I'm saying? So if it's not a first person point of view type of book and you're over narrating what the book is happening and then your characters talk and your characters talk in that accent, fine. But if the whole book is written like that, I just can't do it. And that's, you know, that's not respectability politics. That's not like linguistic like overstepping. Yeah, like I'm not looking down on stuff like that. It's just I can't do it because I just can't. I can't do it. I can't. So it was very funny. I thought what actually really drove this one home was they outline Issa Rae character Santara's her life. And her life is, you know, she went to a prestigious school, she got straight into publishing. Like it sounds like a very middle class life, very, you know, upper middle class black lifestyle. And then you go to the book and you go that. So I think that's that the difference between her actual lived experience to what she's writing is also a major factor to Monk for why he thinks that she's pandering. But lo and behold, I don't want to jump, but lo and behold, when we find out he didn't even read her book, I'm like, well, sir, you don't have a leg to stand on. You can't criticize a work you haven't read, to me.
Oh, personally. Yeah, but Latanya, you know we do that as people. I won't say we, like, I mean, black folk definitely do it, but people for sure will be like,
do it all the time.
What is the title of this movie? Plug Love. I ain't watching that. You know, that movie's so ratchet. It's like, you don't know. You don't know. You didn't read it. You don't know.
Right.
It could be the best thing you ever heard, but you are judging this book by a cover, right?
Well,
I mean, that's literally what we do when we make decisions about exactly. when we make decisions about what media we want to consume, we do make snap judgments, right? And determine whether or not it's something that we think we might enjoy, and then we judge it. And we may or may not partake in that particular piece of literature or a movie or TV. But we do that all the time. We make those decisions, but it is just part of the character, I think, that he would not even deign to read this type of book. He would just see the reception that it got when he was at that literary festival that she was also at and be like, no, I would never lower myself to read something like this. I believe that it's referred to as the language of the gutter at some point in this. Mm-hmm. Like, there are just so many good lines in this movie, too. It's so well written.
Yeah, I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked it. He does take this look at this excerpt and decide that that's the entire book. You know, Mari was just talking about how, yeah, the narrator doesn't have to talk like that, but sometimes your characters do, you know? And mm-hmm. so, but all he heard was a couple lines and was like, I'm out, I'm done. I can't even, mm-hmm. you know, that could have been a very small portion of the book and the rest of it could have been written in, you know, like your typical, you know, the Queen's English, if you will. But because yeah. he heard, hey, yo, Sheila, where you going? You know, like he took off.
It kind of reminds me of like the reaction to the American Society of Magical Negroes trailer.
Yeah.
which I got to say it, sidebar. It's finally being reviewed and stuff. And I've read all the views. And as much as I wanted to be like, why are we, let's calm down. It is what we thought it was.
Baby, that trailer looked a hot mess. I'm not going to lie to you. Mari said it to me and I was like, Mari, what am I supposed to do with this information?
Yeah. It is what we thought it was. And all of the, it's very interesting that all of the black reviewers are like, wow, this is trash. And all of the white ones are like, this is pretty good. I was actually reading a review because I was looking for a review for American Fiction. And this writer actually compared the American Society of Magical Negroes to it by saying, the American Society of Magical Negroes review, a racial satire wittier and more scalding than American Fiction. So, by Owen Gleiberman. So, who is in fact a white author.
Sounds and black he, to me, though.
Well, he prefers the American Society of Magical Negroes to that of American Fiction because he felt like once Thelonious Monk sold his book and he started to get the money for it, he should have been happy that he got the money for it.
Entering take from the white people. Interesting.
See, we're also doing that. We're doing it right now. Right? We haven't seen the American Society of Magical Negroes, but we are sure judging the hell out of it.
Oh, but I'm going to go watch it because I want to have my opinion as well. See, and that you draw the line where you say, that sounds funny. Let me go look and see what I think about it. Because I either want to go pile on or I want to go and be like, y'all tripping. Moving forward, we meet Lisa, Monk's sister, who she's going through a divorce. She's very much the person who is the primary caretaker of their mom. Monk has been, you know, kind of out of the loops when it comes to siblings. Mm-hmm. I guess I should say mom does actually have a primary caretaker, but when it comes to the siblings, Tracy Ellis Ross character Lisa is the one who is the closest to mom and what she's been going through with her health, with keeping the bills paid while going through a divorce, while also working at a fertility clinic. Latonya,
I'm not sure exactly what she does as a doctor.
She's a doctor.
She's a doctor, but I'm pretty sure she works at like
I don't know what kind of doctor she is.
I'm pretty sure it was a fertility clinic or something to that effect. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because she walks through metal detectors every day. Because you know how people are kind of weird about fertility in women these days, right?
Very weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this church is very against it.
Yeah, and they show up to places with guns. It's like, which is crazy. But we see the closeness between her and Monk, and we see that she gives us very much the outside perspective of him, because we've seen him, the highbrow version of him, but she's telling us, no, you're standoffish, you don't come around, you're not as hands-on as you think you're smarter than everybody, you think you're better than everybody, and you keep dating white women. So what's that about? You know, and does that make you feel better about yourself? And so although she pushes back against a lot of his qualities, you can tell they very much love each other. But Mari, she is not here for a very long time. In the film, she has a heart attack or a stroke. It looks like a heart attack. And then she passes away. And this is a portion of the film that I did not suspect, Mari.
No, I didn't either. And I thought this was, again, I think Tracy Ellis Ross here was perfect here, encapsulating so many things wrong. Like, not only in Monk's life, but like, you know, often problems we've seen in the community at large, like the sister having to be the main caretaker of a sick parent or something like that, because the men just move away. Her saying how overburdened she is between work and then a divorce and all of that, but not having any help. And then the heart attack, this is your daily reminder that heart attacks show up differently in Black women than they do in the predominant studies of heart attacks and how they manifest, because normally those studies are done on white men. So normally some of the symptoms that you hear about heart attacks, you know, like the numb left arm, you know, blah, 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 those don't necessarily translate when it comes to Black women. So make sure as you get older, Black women, make sure you're taking care of your heart health. Make sure you're asking those questions from your doctors. Make sure you're looking up those symptoms, because it's actually it's kind of scary how quite different and how understudied it is in us. So she dies like instantly. And I'm like, oh my God. It's mm-hmm. crazy, because she is the linchpin of the family. She's the person who is, she says it, the way they grew up, because Monk was the favorite of their dad, her and her brother, who's, you know, Sterling K. Brown, Cliff, they're closer. And so she is kind of the one keeping their mother together. And she's the one who's starting to see the signs of autism in their mother. And she's telling him, I cannot do this alone. And Monk is even, it's just kind of like brushing her off. And she seems to be the person that the whole family revolves around. And then she's taken away like instantly. And now Monk has kind of no choice but to step up to the role. And I think then he starts to see how burdened she was. And it was, yeah, she wasn't here for a long time, but man, oh man, did she make a lasting impact. And I was just shook. I was shook.
Yeah. When we see Lisa's character pass, we also, you know, in the meantime, we meet their mom as well. This is Leslie Uggam's character. We also meet Lorraine, who is the housekeeper. But if you are paying close attention to the movie, all of these people are affluent, you know, like mom mm-hmm. and all her kids. These are doctors, you know, even he is yeah. a doctor. You know, he's a different type of doctor, but, you know, they all have doctorate advanced degrees. They come from money, or they have they're very well off right now, I guess I should say. And it does feel like Monk might be out of touch with not only his family, but also with society as a whole, you know, especially when it comes to his views on Black people and what interests Black folk. And so with Lisa kind of pointing all that out and then being taken away so quickly, I think that it really does force Monk to find a different way to get grounded, because she was the one who was, you know, bringing him back to the real world and saying, hey, man, you know, you too could do some of this stuff. You too could, you could stop looking down on people. You could stop being so condescending. You could be more present in your family's life and probably in, you know, the views of the larger Black community, LaTanya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, to the point where when they introduced Lisa's character, I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. I can't wait to explore this sibling relationship. She really is telling him what he needs to hear right now and letting him know what the realities are, telling him some history that he doesn't know about their father who, you know, committed suicide. Like, there's just so much tragedy mm-hmm. that happened with this family and so much trauma that's going on. But then she's taken away so quickly that I'm like Mari, I was shook. I didn't know what to do in this moment. I felt mm-hmm. like he did, you know, just watching mm-hmm. her go. The way that they just showed her feet stop moving was so poetic as well. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I knew instantly, because this is something that I lived, is that when she passed away and they had shown signs that her mother was potentially exhibiting symptoms of Alzheimer's, I was like, oh, she's going to snap. Like, this is going to be it. Because the day that my aunt died is the day that my grandmother just completely changed and became a different person. So mm-hmm. I knew that was coming, and that he was going to have to deal with the toll that was going to take on his life, and that there was nobody else that was going to be able to do it because Lisa was gone.
Yeah. He was out of touch with all of that stuff. And with her leaving, it really just, it put him at the forefront, because Brother Cliff has been pretty much doing his own thing in recent time. And he doesn't even know about that. So to summarize, Monk doesn't know that the extent of his mom's illness. He doesn't know how the bills are working. He didn't know dad was having an affair. He mm-hmm. doesn't really know what's going on with his brother's life. He doesn't know anything, because he's been kind of sitting in his ivory tower writing books that people are not reading, right. For no one, you know. So it's very tough to look at from his perspective, especially with Lisa getting taken away. But I agree with both of you. It was very jarring because it's Tracee Ellis Ross. You know, like when she comes on the film, we're like, oh, yeah, we're about to have a good time. You know, she's going to be funny, likable. And I think by doing that, we're forced to sit with Monk, you know, and we don't get the reprieve of somebody who is as jovial as, you know, Tracee Ellis Ross is in this role. So from there, we see that he has to go and deal with his brother, who he's never called. It's been like 10 years. He doesn't talk to him. Apparently, Cliff got caught cheating with a man, and the kids hate him. The wife left him. And now he's living his gay best life, kind of just being an F-boy, like you said. Sterling K. Brown in this role. I'm sorry, Mari. It's just, he's so good.
Yeah. Is it gay best life? Because it's definitely a gay life, but I don't know if it's his best life since he
said he was living his best life. Yeah.
That's true. He seems like he's saying he's living his best life, but it feels like a spiral to me, but I don't know.
No, like, very much so. Cocaine, taking multiple lovers, popping up in swimming pools in the middle of the night.
I mean, it semi makes sense, like the like him taking multiple lovers. That part it isn't jarring to me because they often say, like, you know, once you come out, you got to make up for lost time, all that. Like he said, but yeah, popping up in people's swimming pools, not being able to handle what's actually going on. We see him come visit. As soon as something like even remotely bad happens, he runs. Like he's so like triggered. But Sterling K. Brown plays this character like it's not Sterling K. Brown. It's so funny. He's very funny in this role, but also a dick. But then you see like he's hurting in a way that you can't explain. Or that, you know, it's hard for him to say. And he disappears into this role to me. It's not a character that he normally plays. So it's very funny. And it's like muted too. It's not over the top. It's not an over the top, overly flamboyant gay character or anything like that. It's just like, it's Sterling K. Brown. He's like, every 2 seconds, he's like, yes, I'm gay. He's like, we have to come to that. Like, everybody, we have to realize that, yes, I'm gay. Because even his mom was, you know, forgetting that fact and stuff like that. And, but he's also damaged and hurt and trying to cope in unhealthy ways. And you can see it all over him. Because also, I don't feel like either of them had a good enough, like, chance to grieve their sister, who again was the linchpin of the relationship. So we're seeing both of them kind of spiral out in different ways to address their grief. So
yeah,
amazing acting.
When Sterling K. Brown threatened to eat that white man's sweater vest for dinner at a funeral, I was like, this is fantastic.
The funeral where Lisa left that she hopes that she died under the thrust of Idris Elba, or at least the undignified thrust of Russell Crowe, I believe it was.
Yes.
This family is cracked. And I think that's something also to point out, you know, throughout this film, we're going to see Jeffrey Wright's character write a story about, you know, all of these tropes about, you know, how downtrodden Black people can be. He goes on to write this book called Pathology. He changes it later on to it starts off Pathology, then it's Pathology with an F, and then it becomes just Fuck. But he writes this book to tell the story about, you know, Black trauma. So turmoil, baby mamas, getting shot by the police, all of the things that he says are just, you know, they flatten us as a people. And I hear him, but at the same time, Sterling K. Brown, your family kind of ghetto too. I mean, if you really think about it, you know, sir, your dad was out here traveling OBGYN, cheating on, I mean, basically, what is he? The character from Eve's Bayou? Is he Lawrence Fishburne? He's like a traveling OBGYN and cheating on everybody. You don't even talk to your family. You're estranged. Your brother just got caught cheating on his wife with a man. Like, sir, you a Tyler Perry play too. So it's really funny that you're looking down on these stories when you're basically telling one as well. Yours is just doesn't have these African-American S's at the end of every other word, you know? So I just thought that was so fascinating from him. And probably just another like narrative on him being able to say, I come from middle class, so my drama isn't like your drama. You know, it's not the same. When honestly, you pull back the money, it kind of is the same. Mm-hmm. So we get the story. You ain't worth a piss. Your mama ain't worth a piss. You know, I hate this man. I hate my mama. I hate myself. You ain't shit because I ain't shit. You know, all these just random colloquialisms and just him throwing word salad at this novel and trying to give it to his agent and say, okay, get this out. If this is what y'all like here, I blackened it up for y'all. Be happy with it. Later on, we find out, LaTanya, the people actually are happy with it. The whites are eating this up.
And sorry, before you start, LaTanya, can we also point out that it's acted out in front of him? Like,
yes. Oh yeah, yes.
Yeah,
it's like, cool. Is so cool.
Keith David pops up to just act out the scene, like as he's writing this book full of like, you know, slang and stuff that he doesn't even know how to use. Mm-hmm. It's being acted out in front of him. And I'm so mad we didn't get more of this, to be quite honest. Yes. I thought this was really, really good. And I really wish we got more of it. I'm sorry, LaTanya.
No, please. Because that part was so great. And I was hoping that the movie was going to be more of that. And we get a little bit of it at the end. But we that's really the only scene where we get it. And when I saw Keith David in the credits, I was like, showing up to do what? and then finding out that it was that was wild. But yeah, the whites love it. They're eating it up. They think that it's the best.
It's novel. Raw and real.
It's raw and real. It is of the streets. It is what we need in this moment. It is the voice that we need to hear. And then when he creates this whole persona as well, because he can't just like be himself, apparently, writing in a new style. He has to be a convict on the run.
On the run, a fugitive, yes.
I cannot believe
it. You know, LaTanya, we talked about it, though, with Issa Rae's character, you know, being from, like, maybe, like, an upper middle class. She went to a nice school. She went directly into publishing. Like, you know, she hasn't really talked about any struggles. And so maybe he feels like it's not, the character isn't lived in if it comes from him. It actually does feel like a parody or a satire of a story if it's coming from somebody like him, who we know comes from a fluent background.
Yeah, I guess, but
right, same. Like, you didn't have to do this.
Like, this is just his like overly dramatic streak playing out, you know, that, and the fact that he's embarrassed, like he doesn't he feels like his good name would be tarnished if he associated this type of writing with it. So he has to invent this character that he believes, like, because of the stereotypes that he's built up about Black men in his mind, would write this type of book, which is also very telling.
Yeah. Mari, you think some bitch ass college boy could come up with this shit?
I mean, clearly he did. And I think that's the funniest part to me. And I think I agree with him why he's so angry, is because everybody is talking about how this is so raw. This is so real. This is what people want to hear about. This is the voices that we need. And he knows it's not real. He knows he made it all up. But the fact that the perception of him too, like LaTanya said, but like that the white distributors and publishers who want to pick it up, this is what they automatically assume is real. They mostly probably because they think nobody would lie about
stuff. Like, yeah, why would somebody make this up?
But the fact that they're so eager to like chew on it, be like, yes, this is what we need, it's infuriating. I get why he's mad. I truly do. And I think it's also very interesting that he's an African-American author. His previous books have, from what we understand, nothing to do with being Black, and yet his books are still in the African-American fiction section. And he was like, why? He's like, why are my books here? He's like, because you're a Black author. And it goes back to his like, I don't see race mentality. When it's like, well, sir, you can't ignore something that's happening right in front of you. And I love how we get so many of those little tidbits throughout the movie, and where the satire comes in, where he is literally being like racism are being shoved into his face, and he's, you know, he's still trying to be blind with him. Literally after he says the line, like, you know, I don't really worry about race, or I don't really see color, or whatever he says, he goes to hail a taxi. The taxi drives right by him, and a white person hails the taxi like next to him, and the person gets into the taxi. Like, yes. it's just so funny to me. So I get why he's like, I was doing this as a joke. Now you guys want it, and now you want to pay me my biggest advance for it. This is stupid. And why he's mad. Mm-hmm. Would you sell your soul out for $750,000, Chappelle?
Yes, I'd be in the ghetto, and I'd be wanting to get out. No,
yeah.
And then the question is: are you selling your soul out anyway, or are you just being kind of bougie about this whole thing, right? Because the whites are eating it up, but guess what? Even the black folk like this story. So do meet his love interest in Erica Alexander. Her name is Coraline, and they connect instantly. She's going through a breakup and very quickly moving on to the next relationship. I was like, okay, girl, Jelani ain't even out the door good yet.
Where'd Jelani go?
Right there.
But one of the things they bond over is that she's read his books. Nobody else has read his books, but she has. And so he's very much interested in her because he thinks, oh, this might be what my intellectual equal or somebody who appreciates the finer things like my writing. You know, he thinks so highly of his writing. So, of course, this person likes it. She must be cool, too. Later on, he finds out that she, too, has read Fuck. And he is very upset that she's read it and she enjoyed it. He's like, you like this? Like, yeah, this is for white people and people like you who enjoy reading this kind of junk. But it's crazy to me because I think that's another just hallmark of him just being not connected into what people actually look at and what people actually like and enjoy. We meet Maynard, who is going to be dating their housekeeper, Lorraine. And Maynard even asked him at one point, do you write for NCIS? And he kind of like, no, I'm a real author. Like, I write books. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, you should write for NCIS. You know, sometimes people just like to watch stuff that's entertaining to them, and it doesn't have to be so highbrow. But this is tearing him apart. He cannot allow himself to really just live in that moment of sometimes I got to give people what they want in order to be enjoyed. And people want to enjoy things that aren't necessarily maybe not true to you, but it might be true to them in different ways. So I thought that was very telling of, you know, of his character too. You know, he's just so disconnected from what other people are thinking, because he's so, you know, invested in his own opinion of literature and writing. So him and Coraline, they fall out. She basically tells him he's an asshole, he's a jerk, he's been acting weird. And I mean, a lot's been going on, Latanya. His mom has gotten much, much worse.
That's very true, but she is there for him throughout this entire thing. Like, nobody else is going to be going to help move your mother into a nursing home with you, making sure that she, like, gets the right sandwich, like, things like that. He is rude to her several times throughout this movie. I don't blame her for moving on from him because of the way that he talks and looks down on her for liking a book that he wrote. Like, it's just absolutely wild behavior. And then he tries to make it up later by texting her to ask her to come as his date for the literary award that he is in charge of, like, giving out. He's on the committee for. But it's like too little too late at that point. The damage is already done. But you're right, there is a lot going on in his life that is just being made overly complicated by the fact that he is living a double life. So really, he's like, he's going through so many changes with his mother and her Alzheimer's and putting her into a home, and then, you know, she's being violent with the staff, which is so, it hits so close to home. And they have to sedate her as a result of that. And there are just growing pains that comes with moving an elder into elder care anyway. So he's going through a lot. But on the other hand, a lot of this is on him. He doesn't have to be pretending to be a different person and living a double life and then taking it out on Coraline.
Yeah. You mentioned that he's on the committee to choose a literary award. He's sitting on that committee with several white people and Issa Rae's character, Centaurra. And to his surprise, him and Centaurra Golden are looking at a lot of these issues they're coming up with in this committee. the exact same way. You know, they're like, why don't we try to highlight a new author? Why don't we try like to highlight a story that hasn't been told before? Maybe you don't have to read the entire book, but you could just read the first 100 pages. You know, they're really connecting in a way that you could see that he didn't expect from her, because he really thought that she was somebody who was going to be pandering heavy into trying to tell stories in a way that's very inauthentic and that, like he says, flattens people. Eventually, though, they do meet and they have to discuss the book, because she has read Fuck and she likes it. And he's like, wait, what? Well, she doesn't like it. I'm sorry. She doesn't like it.
Yeah.
She dislikes the book. She says that it's pandering. She says that it's soulless. And he's thinking, okay, but why don't you like it? Because it sounds kind of like the stuff you be writing. And this was, I think, my favorite scene of the movie.
Yes.
I'm all right.
Yeah, this was the moment. I think this is the like what wraps the whole movie up. I think it's funny. It feels like he kind of gets mad. Like, wait, why don't you like the book that I wrote? I don't understand. And it's because she's Black. She can tell that it's not, you know, it's not authentic. It's very flat. Like you said, you can't. And then he's like, well, how is it different from yours? And she's like, I actually did research. You know, I talked to her. This didn't happen to me. She made a good point. Like, I don't need to write about my lived experience if I don't want to. I can pull from multiple things. I did, you know, interviews. I interviewed people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then again, this is where we finally, he's like, well, you know, I didn't read it, but from the excerpts I saw, she was like, how are you having these big, strong feelings and comparing her work to yours, you knowing yours is completely fictional, when you haven't even read the material? And then she goes on to say, he's like, you don't think this is flattening us? You don't think that it's pushing one type of narrative and all of this stuff and like drug pushers? I like how she was going back and forth. And she's like, I think drugs should be legal. Like, I thought it was like kind of like funny. They were going back and forth. And she said something to him that I was like very profound. I thought it was very profound, because he says, I look around and I see where Black people are, and I feel like we could be doing better. And
we have so much potential.
We have so much potential. Yes. And she says, potential is what you see when what's in front of you isn't good enough. And I think this is the moment where his self-righteousness on how Black people are perceived comes full circle, to the point where it's so deep that it is now turned into self-hatred. And I don't think I think this is the moment where he might make the connection, but I think this is definitely the moment that the audience makes the connection, because Centera gives a different view of what she thinks is happening. And like she said, she's like, yeah, but this is the market. This is how I want to sell the books. You know, I'm also doing the research and stuff like that. And he's just like, I don't understand why you want to give into the market, why you want to continue to push these ideals. And it's so funny, because this is one of those conversations that I'm pretty sure we've had directly on this network in itself, because we talk about the different forms of media and Black media that we want to see. And we're constantly saying how Black people are not a monolith, and how every other week I feel like we're talking about like, where is our Black Harry Potter? Where is our Black people on dragons type thing? You know what I'm saying? Because we want to see more eclectic genres coming out of our medium, and we don't want to keep seeing these same drug dealers, hood movies, you know, gang stuff, all of that, you know, just continuing trauma, Black trauma porn. He said she contributes to the Black trauma porn industry, and you know, slave movies. You know, it's hard, because I do kind of agree with his sentiment, but like we said, he leans too far into it, to the point where he is now looking down on people, because he's starting to forget. Like, I think like she said, he's in his ivory tower. He's forgetting that people live these actual lives. So yeah, this might be prevalent in the media, but it's also actually happening. Yes, we want more media about Black people who aren't struggling, but also the media about Black people struggling is also very valid as well. He shouldn't invalidate it. So it was, man, that conversation was so layered. So layered.
Yeah. If someone calls your art soulless, you kind of have to take pause and sit with that, right, LaTanya?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because that's a direct shot right across the bow. Like, you have to evaluate whether or not what they're saying is right. Like, is there some truth to it? You know, he clearly didn't write this out of, like, from his soul. He wrote mm-hmm. this from the part of his brain that was, like, jokingly thinking, what would a white audience eat up in the style of a Centauri Golden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't write that. He'd write this the way that he would write typically his other books. This scene was so well acted and, like, really laid the film's thesis bare. And I thought that it was so good. I was just surprised at how short the scene was. But even yeah. given how, like, the brevity of it, it still got the point across really, really well.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that this scene could have gone on forever and it would have been amazing, because it's such a nuanced conversation. It's the conversation, like Mari said, we have on this podcast, where we will look at something and say, okay, well, let's look at all angles of it and go back and forth about, you know, why this is important or why it isn't important or why this is soulless. And they gave us, you know, a quick dialogue back and forth, maybe like 10 or 12 sentences, and then it was over. But it really did hit home that he's so out of touch that he can't even realize that had he read the book, he might have even realized that she used real stories. You know, these are actually, this right. is her telling stories and from interviews that she's done. And also that she put her soul into it when she went and connected with these stories and then told it, where he's just sitting down and trying to make a parody of what she does. It's like he was the ChatGPT version of a black story. You know, he put in ChatGPT, like, write me a movie for Tubi. And that's what it spit out. And he's like, bet y'all gonna love this. It's like, yeah, some people will like it. Some people will love it. But some people, it's gonna ring true to them, regardless of whether they like it or love it. And for him, it's something that's so outside of his realm that he thinks it's almost like it's not true. Like, it's not realistic to feel these way or to see these people talking like this. It's like, these people live every day. And they deal with these struggles. Baby mama drama, baby daddy drama. That stuff is real. You know, for him, it's like, oh, those people over there do that. But those people over there also read books, you know? Right. So I thought she made some great points. I remember we talked about this when we talked about, you know, Tyler Perry, when we talked about Atlanta, right? And we had talked about, was it Mr. Chocolate? And his studios. And I remember referencing the episode of Black AF by, you know, with Kenya Barris, where Tyler Perry's yeah. on there. And he talks about, like, you know, I give people what they want to see. I'm telling folks that my people want to see the stories that the people that he's familiar with want to see. So yes, you might think that they've been overdone. You might think that, oh yeah, he's doing the same tropes over and over again, but Tyler Perry's making a lot of money because people want to see those stories. It's like the cotton candy for people who want it. And he's giving you something that is not hard to digest. It's something that you can relate to or that you can see other people relate to, but it's not for everybody. But for the people that it's for, they love it. And there's nothing wrong with him catering to his audience, you know, and that's what she's saying. You know, if this is about white trauma, do you ever complain about that? Are you tired of seeing, you know, the same white stories? Mm-hmm. Or did he say, or is your ire only reserved for black women? I thought that was a very, you know, poignant moment. And so.
But then he says, but then that experience, the white experiences aren't attached to the whole entirety of a race. Back and forth was worth it. I do wish that confrontation was a little longer.
Yeah, right, because too. It's like, it's not attached to the entirety of a race, but attached by who? Because, like, mm-hmm. I don't think that all black people are the same. And so when I see a black story, I'm not thinking like, oh, you think all black people do this? No, I don't think that. But he does. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, who are you looking at? Whose perspective are you looking through this? Is it your perspective, or are you thinking this is what white people are thinking? And I need to be playing the white people's game and giving white people what they want is just giving them a bigger narrative of what they could say about black people. It's like, okay, but who gives a damn what white people think about black people?
Yeah. And you should be mad at the white people for doing that.
Yeah. Great scene. When she told him he needs to be mad at the white people, Latanya, I was like, all right, yeah, this is my hyper movie.
Yeah, for sure. Just everything about this scene, like, and then even the lines leading up to it, like the kind of book that people call important and necessary but not well written, like mm-hmm. just so many great lines in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And And they, to cap it all off, they're sitting there trying to decide who, what book should win this award, with five people sitting in them. The two Black people say this Black book should not win this award. And the three white people are like, no, I think it should win. And the nerve of the one lady to say, I got the quote, to say,
is it, we gotta listen to Black voices?
We gotta listen to Black voices
right yes. now.
It's affecting and essential to listen to Black voices right now.
Right.
And then the shot of like the three white people sitting on the one side and the two Black people sitting on the other. And they're like, well, it was 3-2. We outvoted you. So fuck wins.
Right.
It's so essential to listen to Black voices right now.
Yeah, Black voices amazing. In this book, but not the Black voices that are sitting across the table from us, including the Black voice that wrote the book.
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
It's good. I like it. So the movie wraps where we get this is kind of from the book Erasure, very much that he is telling the story about the movie, basically, that he's writing and that the award. So we get multiple endings to where we see an ending where he goes to this award ceremony and he stands up and everyone's like, why are you standing up? You didn't write this book. But turns out he goes up there and admits everything he does. But the movie guy's like, nah, it's not good enough. He's like, nah, that's not good enough. We need something else. Then he tries a different version, I think, where he goes and he makes up with Coraline. But the real Coraline doesn't forgive him in real life. Mm-hmm. And that's just not good enough. So then LaTanya, the third story, he goes, he gets up on stage, and he gets shot
by the FBI.
Yeah, he gets shot and dies, award in hand.
It's a gun.
And no, it's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah, yeah. It's exactly what they want. Let's like get it down on paper right now. Let's go.
Yeah,
which is funny because it makes sense.
Which is hilarious. Like there are all types of little touches like that in the movie, like from choosing an ending like that to like the publishing team wanting a Juneteenth release date.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Oh. My favorite line was when they were like, "Oh, the FBI is looking for your identity, but they're not going to give you up." And then by the end in the movie, he's like, "Yeah." And then I got shot by the FBI.
Yeah, because it makes sense that if the FBI knows that the convicted felon that they're looking for is about to receive a award, of course they're going to go to that. But it's like, but how this shouldn't be possible, because if you look up whatever you might know about him, it'd be like there's nothing in the system. But it's
right, just so convicted of what wrong.
Yeah. He's a fake
like
human.
He even says that in the movie. He's like, of doing what? I haven't done anything. Like, what are they?
Yeah. Yeah, because they were like, what did you go to jail for, if you don't mind me asking? Oh, I'd rather not say. Was it murder? Like, well, you said it, not me. He's like, why would you think it's murder?
You know, it's murder.
Yeah. So by the end, we see that people are buying the rights to his movie, and he's going to be a big movie star. And and it's going to be the story of how he got shot for the fake identity of writing the book, right? The book fuck.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that right there is what prompted me to be like, I gotta go read Erasure. So
yeah.
Yeah, very much. I know that a lot of those themes are from the original book, and so I cannot wait to go read it. And I'll probably message y'all and be like, "This is crazy." But that's the movie. It's so good. I think it's very smart. I think it's very, very funny. We're very well acted, and I really think it's a shame that a lot of people won't see this movie just due to, you know, where it's being released and how the limited release really frustrates me in general. But maybe it'll be on Tubi soon, LaTanya.
One can only hope.
What'd you think about it? What did you think about the film? We talked about it. I mean, like I said, we've given our reviews, but you know, it was a fun ride. I think that the movie is the perfect length, honestly. It doesn't feel like it was too long. Yeah,
hour 40,
yeah. You know, in and out. But I think that there's no, like, I don't have a lot of complaints. Do you?
No, I love this movie. It's very important and necessary to listen to Black voices right now, Chappelle.
Unless we take a vote and we're outvoted, in which case, I mean, it's not like we can experience that, right? Y'all have never been outvoted, have you?
Never.
Never.
Never. Mari, you recommend this for all of the listeners?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think it's a great time in the movie theaters or in the comfort of your own home in a way. Yeah. So, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, I liked it a lot. Go watch it. Go support if you can.
Please go watch it. Please go support. And then, like, please give these actors their flowers because it was so good. And there were many other actors that we didn't talk about in this movie. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, the cast for me is just impeccable. That said, let's take one more break. It's going to be a late break, but we do have to do some housekeeping here. And then we'll be back to wrap everything up right after this.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay. So we're back. Here's the thing. Here on The Connect, we have talked about a number of Black television shows, series, movies. We've been having a good time here. And one of the more recent things that Mari and I have talked about is season 2 of HBO's Rap Shit. We very much were looking forward to finding out what was happening in the next season with Chastity and with Mia and some of the drama. I mean, it was all there. I really felt like they hit their stride. I was ready to go into next season. Mari, we got some bad news. What happened?
Yeah, unfortunately, Rap Shit, it's been announced that Rap Shit will not be coming back for season 3.
Boo!
Very much boo. And that kind of set off a firestorm on Twitter and on social media. Like, they're canceling all of our stuff. And I love that it was a really big outcry for it being canceled. Half of me just wish there wasn't like as much outcry and attention to it when it was on. Cause you know, we were begging people. We're like, go watch season 2 of Rap Shit, get those streams up, get those views up. It's so good. And you know, we got a lot of listeners who said like, I just started watching and listening to it because you guys suggested it. And I'm not trying to turn it on to like people for not supporting it. This is, let's be real, this really comes down to the big hitters making decisions that they don't care how it affects the audience of the shows and stuff like that. So but I'm just like, it just is even more important that we really try and support not just Black media like we said before, but like good Black media. You know, that was some great storytelling from Issa Rae and her team. And I'm just hoping, like, honestly, Issa, girl, try and get out of that HBO deal. Maybe go over to Netflix or Shonda, make your own channel. I'll pay for that streaming service, I think. So it's like, because it's just disrespectful how season 3 is ripped away from us right when it's getting good, right when we're getting like the best acting ever, right when the storyline is heating up. And I'm so mad. I'll never figure out what Chassie's rebuttal is or Francois getting his comeuppance. Every time I think about it, I'm livid and I'm mad. And I know a lot of people who are mad, and I'm pissed, especially when you know that the decision to cut it was not based on anything of substance. It's clearly a financial move by a CEO who is shown to be very stupid and doesn't care about diverse TV programming. So yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I did notice, and it's kind of parallel to this film we just talked about, is that a lot of people were like, well, I heard Rap Shit wasn't even good. You know, like I wasn't watching it. No way. You know, I don't think, you know, if it was better, I would have watched it. Maybe they canceled it because it's not good. And I was like, if you ain't watch it, shut up. Mm-hmm. You're not helping. If that was not for you, then shut up. Because maybe it just wasn't for you. But for the people who did enjoy it, I very much did. Latanya, did you see some of this discourse where people were just saying, like, maybe these shows are getting canceled because they're not good enough?
I did see, excuse me, fighting for my life over here. I did see some of that discourse. And honestly, it's just like, stop, you know? Because when shows that aren't very good, I'm looking at you, Lovecraft Country, gets canceled. There's like uproarious, like people are like, oh my god, this was my favorite show. I was like really invested in this. I can't believe HBO did this. And then they have an established known quantity with someone like Issa Rae backing a show, someone who has brought them tons of viewers and critical acclaim to their network, and they cancel her sophomore show. And it just shows that they have like no loyalty whatsoever to the Black audience and the Black creators that they have. And I don't understand why people feel like they need to have their opinions come up when they probably haven't even seen the show. Like, just stop talking.
It doesn't help. It really doesn't help. If you don't have anything productive to say about it, then like, like, did you email Issa Rae and be like, hey, I think that, you know, maybe you should tell a story differently or something like that. No,
right.
But you, the moment it gets canceled, you gotta go on your whole rant about, well, it wasn't good enough, even though you didn't watch it. I definitely agree with you that people seem to hop on a bandwagon of certain shows deserve to get other seasons and second chances. There are tons of shows where people will be like, oh, the second season was ass, but I like 3, 4, and 5. Or the sixth season was bad, and I like the others. But you can't get there if you don't give people a chance to cut their teeth and to get better.
Exactly.
I didn't love Rap Shit season 1. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my favorite thing in the world. By Rap Shit season 2, I was like, oh yeah, I'm in. But you gotta give it time to build. You know what I'm saying? People don't love season 2 of The Wire, which is crazy.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then later on, people are like, but season 4, oh my God, season 6. You know, like, bruh, you can't get to the later seasons if you don't give these shows a chance. And so, you know, here at The Connect, we are very upset. You know, we will be signing whatever petition comes from this.
All of the petitions,
because Rap Shit deserves another chance. And I think we need to give another chance to Black creators and Black television. Just show some grace, honestly. You know, because we don't get a lot of chances to fail. M. Night Shyamalan makes bad movies consistently.
And the fact that Rap Shit gave three of their three main characters are relative like unknowns, and they gave them a job. Like, Chazzy's character was on Bad Girls Club, like,
so good.
And Jonica Booth like fucking nailed that fucking character from the first season.
To
nailing it in season 2 to a award, I feel like an award worthy performance. And like, now she doesn't get to blossom as an actress within this role. So like, I hope she gets more opportunities. I'm so upset.
Yeah. So upset here. But yeah, so TBD, I guess, whatever happens to Rap Shit, we'll be around to watch it if it comes back. And if not, we'll complain about it for years to come, as people do with other films that and Black, you know, properties that just weren't given a chance to shine. Latanya, what do we have coming up next? Are we doing another movie, right?
Yeah. What movie are we doing next?
I think we're doing The Book of Clarence.
Oh, right. Tonight. Yeah. We're doing The Book of Clarence next, which is one of those things that we keep saying that we want to see, like period pieces with Black people.
Well, this one has to do with Jesus. So I think some people are going to be mad about that.
Well, but I'm excited. I love Jesus. I love God. What's wrong with you? You know?
I mean, my every God, day Jesus is Sunday. The homie.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Look. Here, this movie, The Book of Clarence, it's in the movie theaters here. So I get to go watch it. I don't have to bootleg it like I did the American Fiction. But, you know, so I'm very excited to watch it and to talk about it with you all. So I think that'll be our next episode here on The Connect. If you have any feedback or any suggestions for us on The Connect, you can email us at connect@postshowrecaps.com.
Yes.
One day I'm going to get that right. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll never get it right, and we'll never know. But connect at postshowrecaps.com. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Like I said, I saw one of YouTube reviews that said cover school days. That could be fun, but we'll never know what you think about it until you let us know. Please leave us a 5-star review, 5-star ratings, wherever you get your podcast, and then feel free to reach out to us via email or via our individual social medias to let us know what you think about the podcast, the movie American Fiction, and what you think we should talk about moving forward. Until next time, LaTanya, what do you have going on right now in your neck of the woods?
We just finished up our coverage of Fargo season 5, which was a really good season of Fargo, like right up there with season one, in my opinion. And so you can check that out. Grace and I covered the Emmys, which happened recently. And that was a really fun time for everybody. One of the most diverse group of winners that has ever happened in the history of the Emmys. And so that was good to see. And then Mike Bloom and I are doing Versus again. We are doing True Detective season one versus True Detective season four, Night Country. True Detective season four is kind of a banger. Like, you all need to watch it. It is really, really good. And I have been blessed to get screeners. So I've seen ahead and it is great. Like, this is, you want to tune in for this. Issa Lopez did the thing. So yeah. That's what I'm doing. You can find me on Twitter at LK Starks or on Instagram at Stormborn1222.
All right. Thank you, LaTanya. Okay. And Mari, what are you up to these days?
Over on the Rob Has a Podcast Network, me and Matt Scott are back with the Wrestling Wrap Up Podcast. Again, bigger, longer, uncut. We are having one of our biggest seasons yet. So even if you don't listen to pro wrestling, go support us as we talk to amazing guests. We had the Black and Snurdy podcast on with us this week to talk about everything that happened this week in wrestling. And coming up, we're having our Royal Rumble, a huge Royal Rumble prediction show. It's one of the best times of the year. So go subscribe by going to robhaswebsite.com/wrestlingfeed to see us over there. Also over on Crime Scene, we're about to drop our 90th episode talking about Great Photo, Lovely Life. It is a HBO Max documentary, and it's a trigger warning. It is about child sexual abuse, but we do have a very good conversation with Nicole Bernice of Black by Reality podcast, talking about Great Photo, Lovely Life. So you can catch me and Sarah Carradine every Tuesdays, True Crime, RHAP, by going to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed over there. That's it. I'm doing other things. So just follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. You can also go to the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube page and you can see the Wrestling Wrap Up over there as well.
That's it. Thank you, Mari. Mm-hmm. You know me at Chappelle's_show on Twitter. I'll tweet out the links to all the podcasts that I'm doing. Recently, we interviewed the creator of the show Suits, Aaron Korsh. He came on to talk to Rob and I on our podcast, Suit Yourself, a Suits Rewatch podcast on suitspodcast.com. Check that out. If you want to hear insight about Suits, you don't have to go watch, listen to all the podcasts, but you can definitely check that out. It's also on YouTube on the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube page. Also on the YouTube page, Sasha and I are still covering Below Deck. The finale of Below Deck is this week. So check that out. We go live every Wednesday or, sometimes we'll just post on a Thursday if the schedule doesn't allow. But we're on YouTube talking about Below Deck Med, and we'll be talking about the newest season of Below Deck on Rob Has a Podcast as well. So go to robhasawebsite.com and check out our Below Deck coverage or subscribe to the Bravo Wrap Ups feed, the Bravo RHAP Ups feed, wherever you get your podcast to keep up with more Below Deck content. I'm still doing Netflix shows with Rob. We're wrapping up our three-part coverage of The Trust this week. And so if you've been keeping up with The Trust, it's an interesting show. And Rob and I had some really hot takes about the show. Check it out. It's on YouTube as well. And then, of course, on the Nothing But Netflix podcast feed. I'm pretty sure there's other stuff too. I got some Survivor stuff I'll be talking about soon on RHAP. I think I'm going to be joining another podcast to guest. So follow me on Twitter to keep up with that and more. And then of course, follow at Post Show Recaps, wherever you get your podcast to keep up with more stuff from LaTanya, Mari, and myself. Until next time, make sure you tune in, make sure you check us all out, and then follow up and see us next time on The Connect. Peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.